This episode is sponsored by Adverity.
Are you struggling with client reporting? Well, there is another way. With Adverity, whether you have one client or hundreds, you can effortlessly manage all your client data in a single location to make reporting as easy as clicking a button. The Adverity solution also scales with your business, so as your business grows, the tool grows with you. So remove the stress of client reporting and book a demo at adverity.com.
Hello and welcome to the Campaign Podcast. I'm Imogen Watson, Work and Inspiration Editor at Campaign. In today's podcast, I'm delighted to be joined by the remarkable Chloe Davies, creative, social impact strategist and architect of It Takes a Village, a global hub with a mission to celebrate and champion Black women in advertising, media, marketing and communications. Last week, Chloe officially launched It Takes a Village to a room of proud industry loved ones alongside her family and friends at the Regent Street Cinema. She announced plans to use the collective to collect data and engage communities and analyse the results to produce detailed insights and global reports over the next 3 years. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello. Thanks for having me. One of my favourite people to talk to.
Always. You describe It Takes a Village as the culmination of your life's work. So can you talk our listeners through your journey to this point?
Oh gosh, you start with a question.
Big question.
So I have always been, my dad calls me the why child because I always ask lots of questions. Why this? Why that? And from a very, very early age, so from maybe about 7 or 8, I would be classed as what is known as a gifted child, so super smart. I had reading age of a 16-year-old at 7. I love books. I'm a geek. And so throughout my schooling, I got moved up from year 4 to year 5. I got moved up from year 5 to year 6. But because I'm born on the 1st of September, despite being the second smartest person in the class and getting into secondary school, the rules for gifted children were not what they are today. Today, we send 7, 8, 9-year-olds to university. In the 90s, that's not what they did. So I ended up repeating a year. And very much this kind of idea of belonging and representation, and not knowing what it meant to belong, not knowing what it meant to truly be represented, kind of traveled throughout my teenage years. I went to school in the borough that my parents worked, and my mum was the first Black department manager for John Lewis Partnership. So even though we lived in Walthamstow, which at the time, and I'm sticking with this, was the back end of civilization. No one wanted to come.
I've said to you before. I was like, it's lovely there.
It is now. But, you know, in the 80s, Walthamstow is different place. So that you all know. And so I got to go to school in the borough of Kensington and Chelsea alongside my younger brother. He ended up going to Westminster City. I went to Lady Margaret School for Girls. And that was an incredible experience, very different to what the world kind of knows today. It was 66 girls. 60 girls were white in my year. 6 girls were girls of colour. And so, again, not really feeling truly represented in abundance. But growing up essentially on the King's Road and in Sloane Square, kind of through teenage life. And then I joined Peter Jones at 16 and 4 days old. My mum said, I've cut your pocket money. You start on Saturday. Don't embarrass me and don't talk my business.
Don't talk my business.
If you've met my mum and you did, you know how this runs. At 17, I became the youngest trainee section manager in John Lewis Partnership history. Wow. And just got compared to, of course, you're Nikki's daughter. My mum's name's Nicola, short for Nikki. You're Nikki's daughter. And I would fight and say, no, I worked hard to get here because mum, for all intents and purposes, I didn't really exist when I got there because she said, you know, don't embarrass me. And so throughout my career, kind of had this, who am I? Why am I here? Trying to fit into other people's viewpoints of me. And that, I guess, 7-year-old, 8-year-old, who was very, very clear, very, very smart, very, very strategic, kind of just tried to fight her way out in many, many different ways. I worked in retail for about 16 years. I did PR. I'm a chef by trade. I tried my hand at a lot of different careers and then took a break from working for my G-Work, and I started as the head of PR and partnerships, became the head of training engagement, and helped launch their Work Pride conference, which I hosted, which was 5 days, five themes, 55 conversations. I think I hosted about 53 of them.
Oh, wow.
To 20,000 people around the globe, which was incredible. I kind of just said, do you know what? I just want to focus on my kids. You know, today is the 3rd of April. We are in World Autism Awareness Month. And I am the mum to an autistic little boy. So I wanted to focus on my family and my kids. And I wasn't coming to work anywhere, but I was a consultant for the Diversity Standards Collective. And Rich Miles said, look, I'm working with this agency. They've got this role. It's brand new. You should apply for it. I'm not looking to work, Rich. He said, no, you should apply for it. And so I became the first head of social impact for Lucky Generals, which was an incredible role. I think one of the best jobs that I ever had in terms of, you know, working for someone else. The work that I was able to create there for Virgin Atlantic, Amazon, Zoopla, Co-op, you name it. I was really, really lucky to do some really purposeful work that's since gone on to not only win industry awards outside of our industry, but, you know, for Virgin Atlantic in particular, to change the aviation industry in terms of their gender neutral uniform policy. And this idea that had been kicking around in my head for about 7 years kind of finally solidified. I, like I said, I'm a chef. And so 7 years ago, I had this idea that I wanted to bring my love of food, this idea of a very black cultural concept of breaking bread over food and great conversation. And it was going to be John Bishop meets Saturday Kitchen meets Oprah. That was the plan. Had a real great premise. I was volunteering for Pride in London at the time. And the first person I told was my director of comms at the time, who's James Holt, and a really great friend of mine who really just believed in me and kind of scoped it out and stuff. But life changed. And so being at Lucky Generals, I was lucky enough to go to World Pride in Sydney last year through UK Black Pride in support of Lady Phil, the incredible work that she was doing for Kaleidoscope Trust, and just as a human rights activist and a whole host of other things. And I got the best gift that any parent can have, which was 2 weeks on my own, no children.
Wow, what a treat.
I got to sleep and my brain just kicked in, and yeah, it takes a village, solidified. So I came home and I've been working on it since, well, we registered the 31st of March 2023, so we are now full circle, and a year later we have launched.
Well, you've mentioned the name. Can you talk a bit about how you landed on the name It Takes a Village?
It Takes a Village is an African proverb term that I've heard my entire lifetime from my own family, from other African family members within Black community and Black culture. The proverb is, it takes a village to raise a child, which especially as a parent and as a child that is a product of her environment, I really kind of aligned with. And when I thought about this work that's rooted for Black women and what Black women will need for this work to truly be impactful and for us to have agency, it was the thing that kept going over and over in my head, was it takes a village collective.
And now it's officially launched. Mm-hmm. How will it spotlight Black women's underused and unrecognized power and influence in the UK and worldwide?
Oh, I mean, I'm in my 40s, so I'm going to say it's in a grown and sexy way, but
that's what we like to hear.
Yeah, we are three pillars. So as you said, data-led first under To Be Seen and Heard. And we will launch the We Can't All Be Lying Global Insight Survey on the 8th of April, which for the very first time in any of the recognised 80 industries that exist in the world will look at the experiences of Black women in the workplace and across an entire industry. And all its sectors. And with this work over the next 3 years, we hope to achieve our goal of one in five women one in five Black women being in ADLAND, but also to do a universal reset on what equity for Black women truly looks like, because we will look at our data through an intersectional lens, through the gender and the ethnicity pay gap, which especially here in the UK, legislation will be coming in January. So I like to think we're a little bit ahead of the game. But how can we say what we should be paid fairly if we don't know? And that's why we will always be rooted in data. We'll go on to celebrate with our second pillar, which is to be celebrated and championed, and underneath our conversation series in the salon, because that is where Black women have the best conversations. Hair salon, beauty salon, nail salon, you name it. So Lunch and Learns, our podcast series, training, events, everything from themes like Bring It to the Water, which is about mental health and well-being, What's Mum Got to Do with It, obviously Working Mums, Reclaiming My Time, where we look to conversations around anti-racism and discrimination in the workplace. Oh my gosh. And the one that I really, over the last week, has solidified how much more necessary is needed, is There's No Food at Home. It's a very famous phrase, which is there's food at home. My mum often said when I asked for McDonald's, she went, no, there's rice at home, there's food at home. But there's no food at home. We will be talking about burnout. In 2025, we'll have the ITAV Summit, which is for Black female creatives. In 2026, we will have the ITAV Festival, which looks at Black creativity in all its forms. And in 2027, we will spend all of those 3 years of data to produce the ITAV Industry Charter, which will go across all industries. And again, use all of that rich online and in-person quant and qual. To really redefine the status quo.
What I thought was interesting at the event is you really underscored that this isn't all about diversity and inclusion, it's about data, data, data. Could you unpack that?
Yeah, I think in a lot of different ways, and why I've always said what the work that I do is not diversity and inclusion, because I understand and have been educated, like I said, a product of my environment and the amazing people that I've been around, that to do that work requires academics and an introspection that my work in representation, lived experience and inclusion does not align with, nor should it. That's not the work that we do. And so to really focus on the skill set of Black women, and that's why I use myself as an example. In the last 3 years, what I've been able to achieve in this industry has become so groundbreaking because of my skill set and not the colour of my skin. And oftentimes when we do things through a diversity and inclusion lens, we say, oh, well, you know, we're bringing in more people, we're recruiting more diverse characteristics, more diverse identities, but we don't actually understand the nuance and the layers of education on those lived experiences to retain that talent, to retain diverse people in our businesses. I don't just mean Black women. I mean neurodiverse, neurodivergent, disabled people. I mean LGBTQ plus people. I mean working parents. This is a body of work that requires collective education and introspection. I don't want to get this confused with a box tick for diversity and inclusion. This is about the strategic potential that our industry can gain by having Black women within it at the highest level and every level from beyond, based on the work that we are able to create, the transferable skills that we come with, and looking at something through a new lens. I have made some incredible work in the last 3 years, work I'm incredibly proud of. I am so excited about this work that we will continue to do, but I know so many incredible Black women in our industry who have done more than I could ever imagine have been doing. And are they given the spotlight and the agency that they deserve, that they have earned, that they've worked hard for? No. So that's why we'll do this collective work together with our industry to help be that bridge.
Obviously, you're the architect of It Takes a Village. So is there anyone else in the village that you'd like to flag that you're working with?
Oh my God, my chief hype woman, Laura Lee White. I love her to death. We met through the Compass Club, which is run by the amazing Madeline McQueen. It is a place for Black and Black mixed heritage women to reach their North Star, a coaching, life-affirming, just beautiful space for us to build and grow with each other. She also runs Spectrum Speakers, and we just aligned on what it is that I'm trying to build here, and she's been so great in building such a great foundation in this body of work. I really couldn't ask for a better wing woman to kind of be part of it. And we're building out an amazing team, but I also think, you know, the DSC have been great, our research partners Colette Phillip and Brand by Me. They were the first they're our founding resident, they're the first just people that said, we believe in you, we see what it is that you're doing. I didn't even get to finish my sentence when I was telling Colette what I was building. She was yes. like, I'm in, take my money.
Sign the dotted line.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Which was incredible. And
means he's doing something right.
Yeah, and our brand pillar is Digital Cinema Media. So DCM and Karen Stacey, they were the ones that actually gave us the space. Karen is an incredible champion of mine and said, this work needs to be on a cinema screen, and I'm old school, I love an old cinema.
It was nice, there was popcorn. Yeah,
there was popcorn, it was great. So yeah, the everyone that's been supporting us visibly behind the scenes so far, I couldn't have asked for a better group of people, to be honest.
You've mentioned that We Can't All Be Lying Global Insight Survey. Can you give us any inclination when that will go live, and how will that work?
Yeah, so it's an online study in the first iteration.
We'll add the link.
Yeah, we will, and it will go around the world globally. We will also then focus on two phases of focus groups and interviews. So phase one, UK and Ireland, will start first. It's here at home. We then go to North America and Caribbean. We then go to West and South Africa. And then the last phase will be Western Europe. Phase two, Middle East, South America, East and North Africa, Australian Pacific. And then finally, Eastern Europe, and we will also cover in the Pacific, Asia. And we do phase two pretty much for the 25 to 26, because we understand that conversations around Blackness, Black womanhood, require a depth of knowledge and education around colorism. And so we will work together with our partners on the ground, different advertisers, community groups who've been doing this incredible body of work already, to really establish where we're at in the landscape for there. So not long to go.
For anyone who's listening and would like to get involved with this, how would they become a resident or a citizen?
So residents are our agencies, brands and businesses. You can get in contact via my chief hype woman. she is ll@simplymisschloe.com. You can find us on LinkedIn and Instagram too. If you are a Black woman in Adland, you will be a citizen. Again, please just get in contact with us via our platforms or contact@simplymisschloe.com. And then lastly, one that you'll be able to see, we talk about it, we just are in the like conversations this week. They will be our champions. So our champions will be our ambassadors, and you will start to see them too, but we will do a big reveal in Cannes Lions this year.
We spoke before the podcast about the fact that you've been so busy, you've barely been able to post on your socials, but I did see you share a quote by Jonas Salk that said, "Hope lies in dreams and imagination and in the courage of those who dare to make dreams into reality." What tickled you about that quote?
I've always had big dreams.
Mm.
I've always had wild thoughts and things that have lived outside of the realm of my head. You know, I had an overactive imagination at 7. I absorbed a lot of information. You know, I'm a geek. I'm a comic book kid. And so I loved this affirmation that it gave me to continue to keep hope alive. I think, you know, I've talked about this often outside, you know, personally, 2023 was a defining, very heavy, very pivotal time in my life, especially the latter part of 2023. There were times where I felt like I had no hope, and I felt like I had, you know, no dreams, that, you know, they were in the dustbin. And so it was my village that helped keep that hope alive for me. It was my children, my chosen family, my friends, my parents were incredible. You know, the people that see me, a massive thank you eternally to the campaign team collectively, who have always been some of my greatest champions, quietly or out loud. And that's really when I read it, that was the bit that said to me, yeah, that's why you kept going. Like, they can see something sometimes that maybe you can't, and they'll help you affirm your wildest dreams. But if you don't believe your wildest dreams, then how are you ever going to have any hope? And so in building something like this, I want Black women to have hope. Whoever you are, whatever you want to be, whatever you want to do, this is a place for you to be able to do that. We're just reestablishing the foundations, because I don't think they've ever been built by us and for us in a way that tangibly meant that the industry was accessing our skill set.
I wish everyone could have been in the room last week, because
there's a video. Don't worry,
there's a video.
There's a video.
That was a good little segue. We didn't plan this. But it really, like, it was hard not to publicly cry. I know, and I did publicly cry, but
I was trying not to cry, but
no, I was talking about myself.
Literally just set me off. I think it was emotional.
There was many applause.
I think it was emotional, because I think you got what it meant to us. You get what it means to us. And it's about the work, it's about hope, it's about the possibility of the unknown in an industry of storytellers, like in an industry of such wild imagination, the mischief that we can make, the creativity, the strategy, the insight. All of it comes from this weird and wonderful place where we get to be in this playground. And so, you know, to have true access, autonomy and agency over that, through that and with that, that was the energy I think that I felt the most. I didn't take long. Some call me a socialite, I'll own it. I'm a social butterfly. I didn't really stop to take in who was there. And when we played the campaign video, I sat at the front, as I'd been told, in my seat. So I couldn't see everybody around me. And I just had people passing tissues over my shoulder because I'm weeping like a baby. It's different watching it on a laptop or a video, you know, or a phone screen, and then you see it on a cinema screen. And it was my mum, and she was actually just taking her flowers for the very first time in her lifetime, which I loved and was so proud that I got to help give her that moment. But
that was what set me off. I was watching your mum.
I stood on the stage after Laura Lee introduced me. I stood on the stage and I looked at the room for the very first time, and then I had to pinch the inside of my arm because I was like, don't cry now, to see, you know, like you said, like just some of the people I most admire in our industry, my family, my friends, you know, change makers, people who do incredible things, Black women that nobody has no idea who they are truly and honestly and what they've done, and that they all showed up, as I said, just to be there in celebration of me and the work that we're building. I will forever be grateful, like it's a photograph imprinted on my mind that I hope I never forget.
That's all we have time for. If you'd like to learn more about what we've been discussing, then please visit our website, campaignlive.co.uk. We will find details of Chloe's collective and where to find out the survey, among further reading and details of our subscriptions. And if you enjoyed this episode of the Campaign Podcast, then please follow us, like us, and leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Big thanks to Haymarket producer Till Owen, and on behalf of the Campaign team, thanks for listening. I hope you'll join us next time.